Good morning. We might make a start. Julia's shut the door, so it'd be good if... I was hoping a few people would be in the front row, but we'll go with it. I'm reminded to let you know, but I'm sure you're all familiar with it, that web app and tweeting is available to you all. We've got a special paper this morning, Lifetime Financial Planning and the Causeway. Let me first introduce our two presenters and then a little bit about the paper. So Hayden Burno and Jevon Fulbrook are both known to me. My name's Andrew Matthews. I'm the chief actuary at Medibank in private health insurance. And I started that role about just over 3 years ago. At the time, Hayden was the senior actuary at FIAC, the private health insurance regulator. I was in my first day at the job at Medibank, finding my way, and I got a phone call. Hi, my name's Hayden and I'm from the regulator. I thought, oh, damn. It's not what you want on day one. And he said, look, the appointed actuary role is really important to us. We know it's your first week, and if you've got any questions or there's anything we can do to support you, give us a call. And with that, pretty much hung up. I was quite taken aback by that. It doesn't surprise me now on reflection, because Hayden cares a lot about relationships. And the relationship between the regulator and the actuary at a health insurer was important to him. He's since left the regulator, and being the entrepreneur that he is, has formed his own consulting firm called Coburn, which is now going through a change to become called Causeway, which you'll hear a little bit about today. So I've had the privilege of working with Hayden, not just at the regulator, but he's done some consulting work for us, through our IPO and listing on the stock exchange around capital management. Jevon also joined Hayden at Coburn on a casual basis as a graduate or while still studying. And I've come to admire that he gets the job done. He's one of those people that when given a piece of work, you can put your mind at rest that it will just get done. He's pretty digital savvy and he's an activator by trade. So when I've got an idea or I've asked Hayden something, if it gets to Jevon, I know it will actually happen. Now, their paper, The Causeway. I read this paper. I've talked to them. It certainly is provocative and caused me to think a lot. I think that will happen with you today. Today, we're invited to participate in a conversation around the cause and things that are important to us. With that, I want to hand over to Jevon and Hayden to talk about their paper.
Thanks, Andrew. I'm Hayden. So welcome to a session on financial planning, which is being given to you by two people with zero training and zero experience in financial planning. So something a bit different. But really, at its simplest, what we've tried to do is just apply some good business strategy, strategic thinking to to our lives and how, so just as a business works out what is its mission, objectives, you could call it its cause, and then how are we going to maximise those cause outcomes, we've just tried to apply that same thinking to our lives, which seemingly is something that not many of us do that often. So it throws up some interesting ideas. Probably the genesis of this thinking for us, probably about 3 years ago for me and maybe a year ago for Jevon, where I was looking at a career change, and as I was reflecting, there were things that I was identifying that I cared about as I sort of tried to apply this business strategic thinking, things that I could call my mission or my objectives. I realised I just wasn't investing that much into them. And so talking to people, you'd be amazed at the range of strategies that people came up with for how I should go about this change. All the way from... go and get the best paying job you can and then give lots of money to your cause, through to just just take a while and it'll probably fade. Don't worry about it. Just be normal. Go out and be a social entrepreneur. And by the way, Kevin Lin's here. He's got a session next on Actuary Entrepreneur that I think will tie into this nicely. All the advice, I felt it was missing a really solid, logical, robust grounding. And so I guess I set about trying to think through this. So this is a set of scales, and the grey line is sort of the before picture for me, and I would hypothesise for many of us. So it shows that on the left there, there's a sort of a heavy weight that the cup is missing on the grey one. But imagine there's a cup there with a heavy weight in it, and that was the things that I cared about. And I had a burden for those things. On the right was my level of investment into them, not that much. So I felt something was out of balance. And so a good strategy, of course, would balance those up, and so that the level of investment into the cause on the right would match the level of care on the left. And you might wonder why the cups are spinning outwards in the after picture, the red picture, and that's just saying, well, we could do that in a boring way and just heap some weight into the one on the right and then they end up balanced. But maybe there's a more creative way that we could think about solving this problem. Maybe if you inject the cause way into it, maybe it actually spins the scales around and gets them up in balance that way. So just something to ponder as we go through. What would our lives look like? What would our world look like if our level of investment in causes on the right was raised up to match our level of care? So which begs the question, you know, first step of strategy is work out what are you trying to maximise, what's the mission, what's the cause? And we all have very different versions of this. And of course we'll have multiple things that we care about and we're trying to maximise as sort of the sum of multiple causes in our lives. So career, happiness, love and relationships, various spiritual ends. I've tried to cover all the what all the major religions would say there. Fifth one, I've bucketed together lots of ones with a similar sort of theme: pleasure, comfort, money, housing, retirement, etc. The sixth one, these are similar again: security, freedom, choice, health. That sort of give us the freedom to do things. And seventh one, provide for ourselves and our family, and including into the future. And the eighth one I've listed as social causes. So what I mean by that is really just things that are outside our family, doing something to contribute to the lives of others in a community or in the world. But equally, it could be contributing to the environment, animals. You could inject lots of alternative causes in there. So for this paper and presentation, we really needed to create a subset of those, a case study to dig into further. It would have been quite challenging to try and come up with a framework that covered all of those. So the case study we've chosen is a person who cares about the bottom three. They're the three major causes in their life. So security, provision for family, and a social cause. And you can almost, at times in this presentation, we'll bundle six and seven together, which is really under sort of providing for your family and security as one, the personal side, and the social cause on the other side. These are the key questions, the four questions that we've answered. Just done a little two-by-two framework there. So your personal profit and loss and your personal balance sheet and the cause, profit and loss and balance sheet. Question one that we're going to look at is, and so I would suggest these are a useful set of questions. They won't be all of them, but to help you work through a lifetime financial and other strategy. So question one is, it goes across the P&L and balance sheet because it says, how healthy do I want my P&L to be, or how quickly do I want to build up my my assets, my balance sheet? Do I want to turbocharge that and do that really, really quickly, or am I happy with a slower rate that reaches a level that that we'll be able to provide for our future at retirement exactly, or what is that shape of that curve going to look like? Question two is a really important one. I think it's fundamental to this presentation, which is, when will I contribute to my cause, now or later? And I think the key question that needs to be asked there is, what, in my eyes, is the return on investment into my cause? So if I've got this social cause that or even my one of my personal causes around my family, when I invest an hour into that or a dollar into that, what is the return in my eyes? It'll be a soft thing, hard to measure, but if it's a social cause, it might involve changing someone else's life, you know, making a significant contribution. And many people will think, well, that's a really big immediate return. And then they might think about, how is that going to multiply? When you change one person's life for the better, are they going to have a flow on impact to the people around them? Is that going to multiply through time? So if your answer is that time or money that I put into my cause is generates a really high return on investment, the next logical step is, well, then I need to try and find a way to invest into that soon, because so it can multiply over time, so it can start generating that return. The alternative is I accumulate my assets and I invest later into my cause. We know what the rate of return on assets is over the long term, 4, 5, 6, 7%, and just got to compare that to the rate of return in your eyes on the cause. Question three will dabble a little bit into, okay, I do want to contribute to my cause. What is going to maximise the outcomes? Is it contributing time or money? Question four, I've got some balance sheet assets in my personal balance sheet. Is there anything that I can do with those that might contribute to my cause? Hand over to Jevon and I'll be back at the end.
Thanks, Hayden. Good morning, everyone. So as Hayden said, I do have nil expertise in financial planning, so I'm going to try and keep it quite simple. At its core, financial planning can be thought of, you're in a position A, somewhere on this map here, and you want to try and reach a position of financial stability in the future, which you can see as we have illustrated using the provide for the future line. So that basically says you've got enough assets at each age point in order to provide for you and your family sustainably into your expected lifetime. And what we've sort of done is we've taken a little bit of a twist on that, and we say you've got this cause that you also want to invest in at the same time, as well as providing for yourself and for your family. Thus, as a result, there's a number of different ways that you can sort of approach this sort of strategy, and there's a myriad of different options. So what we've tried to represent a couple of bookend cases, as well as a third case. So the first bookend is the Monopoly line, which is this orange line up there. So essentially you can think of this as, if you're playing the game of Monopoly early in your life, you're trying to build up as much wealth in your early years, racing towards that provide for the future line. And then once you've achieved that, you then look to try and give as much as you can sustainably towards your cause. The risk with something like this is that you may continue on that Monopoly line, the risk being that maybe you've become comfortable with your current financial position and your current wealth levels, and you wish to accumulate more. And as a result, you actually push your own provide for the future line up higher. And so you attain much higher levels of net assets than you actually need to provide for the future. And this detracts from your ability to contribute towards the cause. As a contrast, a give-give-giver is someone who chooses to invest all their time and resources into their cause from day one, essentially. They forgo any asset wealth accumulation, and in retirement they become reliant on the government pension and their other sort of support networks. So if you think of the Monopoly line as someone who's trying to maximise specifically the cause of providing for their family, And the giver is someone who's maximizing specific cause outcomes, so this is social causes. Then the responsible maximizer looks at maximizing the sum of both of those causes. So that's characterized by lower asset wealth accumulation over early years, as they still try to contribute small amounts towards the cause, whilst also building towards the provide for the future line as they near retirement. Another couple of ways of viewing this is you look at something called a life grid. And this life grid sort of looks, is split into four main quadrants. So you've got your personal and cause, profit and loss, and balance sheets. And within each of these quadrants, they represent the health of that quadrant over the age progression of the individual. So, for example, the personal P&L, the first three columns represent 15-year gaps. So the six columns, so you go from age 25 through to age 55. That's indicative of the high amount of savings that a Monopoly plan has in the early years as they look to push towards that financial independence line or the provide for the future. And that's characterized by the growth in the balance sheet health as well over that time period, with the white representing nil assets and black representing a position at or above the provide for the future line. What's quite interesting is the impact of this on cause outcomes, so the cause P&L and the cause balance sheet. As there's no investment in the cause in early years, as you're racing towards that provide for the future line, the cause P&L is white. However, later in life, if we're assuming that we do start to contribute large amounts to the cause, we do see that there's very strong health in the cause P&L. And these contributions to the cause enable the cause to undertake certain projects that enable them to build reputation and awareness of that cause that you care about, enable them to build specific expertise that build the balance sheet. So you can see this slightly healthier state later in the individual's life. In contrast, a giver has a very low sort of health in the personal side. The balance sheet is very light grey, and the P&L is also a grey, indicating basically a net zero position. What's interesting is the cause P&L is very, very dark orange throughout the life, and it's characterized by the maximized giving and investments that you're putting in towards the cause. And as these cause contributions occur throughout the entire lifetime, there's a lot more ability for the balance sheet to grow over a longer period of time, and thus it actually reaches a much higher level of health later in the individual's life. Thirdly, the responsible maximizer. Very similar to the Monopoly, is that you see you do reach the provide for the future line, which is that black line around age 65, but it's characterized by smaller P&L contributions. So previously the Monopoly line had black up here. These are much lighter shades of grey, and that's because you're actually contributing small amounts to the cause in early life over here. And these small amounts do enable the cause to still function and produce all these projects that enable them to grow awareness and also build the reputation of the cause that you care about, thus also allowing the balance sheet to grow and still eventually reaching a strong level of wealth late in the individual's lifetime. As Hayden mentioned before, we can sort of look at the difference between a social investment return and a financial return. And if you take the case that the social return is greater than a financial return, you'd want to invest as much as possible as soon as possible. Thus, you want to push the responsible maximizer curve as far to the right. There are five different ways that we can do this. First of all is simply improving one's financial causeway literacy and planning. That is, where are you today? What does your provide for the future line represent? And how much do you care about your social cause? Number two is the purchase of life or TPD or income protection insurance. And that enables you to hold lower levels of saving, as you know that in the contingent cases that your family will still be provided by the security that the insurance offers them. Thirdly, renting longer. And this is a bit of a difficult decision for the responsible maximizer, as they have to trade off the security of their family that comes at a bit of a cost of the lack of security that comes with renting against the ability for them to contribute larger amounts to the cause earlier on in their lifetime. Fourthly, building soft assets. And this is the sort of comes in two different ways. You've got your career soft assets, which enable you to garner a higher wage in the workforce, enable you to sort of go and do development training, build up experience, and as a result, you're able to accumulate assets at a much faster rate later in your life and still reach that provide for the future line around the age of 65. So as a result, it sort of comes up like this. The second form of soft assets, and probably most important, is your relational soft assets. That is your support network, so your friends and your family. If you have a very strong support network and a sense of community, then you're able to lean on others for support and you're able to support others as well as they endeavour towards assisting their causes. Finally, there's utilising a social worker or social entrepreneurial marketplace. And these kind of exist already in small levels. And what this is matches social entrepreneurs with essentially givers, people who wish to contribute large amounts of their time and energy towards a cause. And they pay their wage, so that provides some form of financial stability towards their family, whilst also enabling them to contribute large amounts towards their cause. And I'll pass back over to Hayden.
So we're up to question three now from that initial box, which is, okay, I've decided to contribute something to my cause, and what makes most sense, time or money? So there's just a few questions that I considered on my journey and that might help others. So we know what our time is worth in a commercial setting, our salary, and just think about what could it be worth, what outcomes could it generate in the cause setting. Two and three are sort of similar here, basically just looking at our, doing a stock take, where do we have capacity? Some people on medium and low wages won't have any capacity to give money, but they may have capacity to give time, and just look at our own situations there. Number four was important for me, and this sort of tipped me towards being more interested in investing time than money, because I knew it would really engage me to try and solve some problems for some social not-for-profit organisations and that sort of thing, and leave me energised and probably more productive in other areas of my life. So that's what I went with. But of course, you could test them both out for a while and see which one was working best or which one had the most potential. We're going to do something a little bit different for a few minutes, have a quick break before the last few slides. Just interested in maybe if you can talk to your neighbours for a few minutes, just about anything that struck you from this and what kind of possibilities for yourself or maybe someone else in your family or someone you can think of. What possibilities arise in your mind? So probably about 3 minutes, and just have a little chat, and then we'll come back and finish off with a few more ideas. Thank you. I'll just give you one more minute so you can swap over if you want to, if the other person can share. Okay. Now I would love to hear. I'd love to hear maybe two or three people share just what struck you from that conversation. I feel like I've been doing this thinking in isolation for a long time, so I'm really interested in how it strikes others. So Andrew's got a microphone.
I don't move around with this, but just two or three groups, what struck you about the conversation you just had?
Yeah, look, we just wondered, like, for what proportion of Australian families this might actually represent a reality. Because, I don't know, I have an impression that Australian families are doing it a bit tough. You know, as we were discussing, a lot of people are faced with the idea of renting their whole lives these days, who can't get into the property market. And trying to have families and balance, you know, raising children is already a struggle for a lot of Australian families. So I kind of think if you were targeting this sort of framework at people who are wealthier, like within a financial planning context, maybe that makes sense. But I think for a lot of Australian families, it would be nice. It would be kind of like a nice to think about, yeah.
Another group? Julie and Trevor.
Well, what struck me, I guess, is I'm probably at one of those points at the 50-odd sort of age group of thinking about my own life and what I want to be doing in the next 30 years or something like that. But I have the experience of doing a bit of both, working part-time, working in the community, volunteering at the high school and volunteering a playgroup, et cetera, and passing on some of my experience. But I'm also well aware of the experience of being an actuary and some of the skills that you can actually bring to communities. When you do something of an actuarial nature, they just get blown away by what you can do.
Now you don't get off sitting down the back, so at least one group down here.
Hi, Kevin Lynn here. We were discussing how actuaries can donate their time for their cause, in particular their technical expertise. We were just wondering what the best way to do that was, because our profession is not as readily available for us to donate our time as compared to, say, doctors or lawyers. Yes.
Thank you. There's a few things, Payden. So back to you.
Okay. Very interesting. I'll give a very quick response to a couple of those. People on kind of middle and lower incomes certainly have less money available that they can give, but in practice, a lot of them volunteer in various ways. Maybe they might think they're not giving much to their communities, but once you add up those hours, I think there's a stat saying something like 30-something percent of Australians volunteer time into a sort of a charity or social not-for-profit, but another 50%, so we're into the 80s, contribute time to some kind of community organisation, whether it's coaching their kids' soccer team or... So a huge proportion of Australians are actually investing time into some kind of social cause. And so I guess what I'm encouraging here is just a bit more of a step back and think and plan, a bit more intentional approach. And in regards to how can actuaries, what's a good way of facilitating actuaries contributing their time in a way that where it can be valued? One thing we're looking at doing is seeing if we can set up a sort of a pro bono scheme where we can match up actuaries to some meaningful social work that needs to be done, and try and act as the middleman or the Uber of that kind of connection. So interested in talking with anyone who's got ideas around that. We looked at three plans before. Here's a fourth one, which is similar to the one in the middle, the responsible maximizer. It's a purple line. So it's got the line moved to the right, maybe using one or two of the strategies that Jevon mentioned. But the other difference is it's doing something different with its assets. So it's not just investing in shares and bank deposits and whatever, but, you know, those sort of financial investments. It's looking for a way that it can invest its, or the person who's doing this is looking for a way they can invest their assets into something cause related. So social impact investment is a really fastly growing field, and it's basically trying to find an investment that will give a financial return, so help us accumulate towards our provide for future line, but also generate a cause outcome at the same time. So I think it's really interesting. There's a lot of potential to do some new thinking in this area. So one idea, I think I saw a recent summary of assets in the not-for-profit sector in Australia, and two-thirds are in properties. So well over $100 billion of assets in the social sector are in properties. And there would be times where those properties get funded by streams of donation money. So in those cases, the donation money gets, in a sense, diverted into these properties and then sits there and earns 7% a year over time. But what if there's another way where that donation stream can keep on going to the mission, to the field, if you like, but people with assets and super could be unit holders in a trust for those social organisations. So what that will do is it frees up the capital from those social organisations so that they can grow, they can invest more into their mission. So that would be one type of sort of social impact investment. That's the financial assets, and of course there are soft assets that we all have as well that we can sort of lend or borrow or park in the cause. So as actuaries, we have skills and IP. Maybe we have some models or that we can help apply in the social setting. Our social networks, we can share information about our cause with others, those sort of things. And this is pretty close to the responsible maximizer life grid. The only real difference is that we've found a way to get more contribution to the cause balance sheet earlier. So this is a bit darker earlier in our lives. So up until now, we've been quite focused on the individuals, on making an individual strategy, an individual plan. But we touched on a few things along the way, ways to facilitate individuals making bigger contributions to their cause. And so here are some of those systems or some of those ways, none of which are in operation now in any big sense. So better financial causeway literacy just means better understanding of these concepts, better planning by individuals, and we can see how that could end up creating better social cause outcomes. The social entrepreneur salary marketplace might move some people from working in their current regular jobs into a social setting, create better outcomes through that. Residential property trust, we haven't touched on this, but this is This is where tenants can have very long-term leases, 20, 30 or unlimited leases. So in that way, they get the security for their personal cause, their security and their providing for family by having that unlimited lease and the stability. But they get the financial benefits of renting and having that lower stream of cash flows now, which frees up their money or time to go to their social cause. So they would, these tenants would be matched up with investors. And in fact, those investors would regard that as a social impact investment because it's creating both the financial return through the rent and a cause outcome. The fourth one, we just touched on this one, the social cause property trust that would free up capital for the cause. And the last one, I talked about soft assets. We have some that might be useful to a social cause, but how are we going to actually match them up and facilitate that? So some kind of matching service or an actuarial pro bono scheme could help in that regard. So... that's five ideas we're interested in sort of discussing and pursuing over time and really interested to hear the views of others and thoughts along those lines. That's it. Thank you.
All right, we might take some questions for Hayden and Jevon. I'll kick off with one. Just reflecting as you spoke that are we seeing a resurgence in cooperative businesses along this nature? I think of JB Weir and I suppose a doyen of capitalism recently had a paper on philanthropy and not-for-profits. And on the other end of Bourke Street I see a kinfolk cafe where I understand the staff donate their time and it seems to be running as a viable business.
Perhaps. I think those things are... those examples are striking and interesting to us because of the general trend in the other direction over time. I don't know if they're enough to represent a change back in direction towards the social causes, but certainly social impact investment, I think, is an example of people looking for ways to make a contribution, looking for something with meaning, with purpose that aligns with their particular values. I think that'll be social impact investment will be a very interesting one to watch.
Any others with a question? Kevin, you can move up to that microphone there. You can actually pull it out of that if you like. There you go. That will help you hand it to the next person.
Okay. Thanks for a great presentation, guys. My question is, what are some contemporary causes that you've seen that perhaps you could enlighten us with? What are major themes affecting society that you think we can add value?
Yeah, good question. I think I mentioned up front, you can probably group them into at least three groups. We've got social, you know, people-related, environment-related, and animal-related. I don't know if people might think of some more and feel free to contribute. I've worked for several not-for-profit organisations. One is around... many are in relation to poverty. It can be financial poverty or relational poverty or other types of spiritual poverty. And all of those, I think, actuarial skills can be very useful, both in terms of the strategy for the organisation, but also thinking about identifying and measuring and clarifying the problem, whatever the problem is that's trying to be solved there. If it's a question of poverty, what does that mean and what would success be? What are we trying to change by how much? There's a lot of ways in which measurement and quantification can help. And then on the organisational level, it's just applying our skills. So just like I work with Medibank on capital management, every not-for-profit sort of social organisation I've seen has struggles with their, almost every, with their levels of capital, their sustainability, their resilience. So we can help build some resilience into those organisations. We can help them with their price setting, just like we do in insurance. Those are a few.
Do I have to have a cause, or am I already? What struck me when you were talking, I started off thinking, oh, I don't know if I've got any of these cause things. But then I thought if I sat down and mapped it out, I'm probably involved in a lot. So what's this balance? Do I need to start a cause, or is it about better contributing to movements or causes you're already, in effect, part of if you sit back and reflect on it?
We've all got things we care about. We might not use the language causes, but, you know, most people would care about their friends or family. That's, in effect, a cause. Care about our building our own kind of security in our future and accomplishing something. So, and all those kind of causes were listed. So you do have a cause. And so the first step is probably identifying those for many people. They probably don't know what they are. And mm-hmm. So that's step one, and there's all sorts of techniques and tips and books you can read about finding what you actually care about, what you're passionate about. And then step two is just building a strategy around that.
I think charities are a good way to start off thinking about the cause. It's the sort of charities that you come across over your lifetime and the ones that you're happy to put some money into. For me, it's the environment, and I always think about the environment can't help itself against humans. You know, humans can help themselves, but the environment has a hard time fighting back. Leave the humans and turn to a world that's like the blue. I like this comment.
Thank you, Trevor. What about, before we wrap up, just a couple of people to share, what is it that resonated for you in that? Did you have a doubt? I know, Lisa, you shared a doubt that might emerge as you reflect on this. What's the thought-provoking gift that Hayden and Jevon gave to you today? I'll thank them with a bottle of wine, but let's hear a little bit from the audience. You know, something that had meaning for you.
About 20 years back, I was asked, would I go on the school council? I'm not an actuary on the school council. I'm the person who says, why? What's the educational reason for wanting to spend $5 million on that building? And can we look at why we're doing this? And going through the annual financial accounts for the TUSCAM, what's this? Where's that? I don't believe that one. So you're not being an actuary, but you're making a tremendous difference. Whereas in Melbourne, there were some schools out in the western suburbs that actually went bust. Private schools, they tried to do too much, too soon, and their school councils were nice people. But there was nobody there saying, come on, even the school council members have to pay their fees. So they're hopelessly behind. And you learn so much. You learn about being a director, working with people you never otherwise would have met, and eventually have the joy of choosing the school principal, to getting your own back on all those school principals who asked you awkward questions, to say, what do you know about this? How would you handle that? It's quite fun. But you can each make a contribution, even if it's only being the treasurer of the local Girl Guides. And if you say you haven't got children, well, there's probably some entity that you belong to needs an honest treasurer. And your former school, if you went to a private school in Melbourne, would probably be delighted to meet you up again to contribute something to how the governance is done. I'm still on the school council. I still organise everybody. I even buy property at auction. I couldn't do it for myself. Thanks.
We've got time for one or two more, Julie.
I love that last one, revenge.
I think there's a generational issue as well. I feel privileged to have been able to go to university where I didn't have to pay fees, and I've been able to work in a career that pays very well, been able to buy a property that's increased in value, and thinking about the next generation of my children who are going to come, if they get to university, will have debts, will have maybe limited opportunity to buy property, et cetera, and I feel a responsibility of passing on the wealth that we've generated, and whether, and I know that there are many people that do struggle in not owning their own property. So things like a residential property trust, I'm interested in that sort of concept, so that people can have this security of being in their own home.
Anyone else?
Feel free to comment.
Well, one more, Tony.
Yeah, I suppose the thing that struck me is this sort of thing, the cause side of things, is going to be very individual. It's very much a personal situation, personal circumstances, what you actually come across in your own life to some degree. Your experiences will influence where you end up in terms of what becomes important to you apart from your own family and those types of things. And I suppose the difficulty I see is translating the ideas that you've presented here and actually disseminating them so they can be used practically by people. It's one of these things where it's all good in theory, but how you actually apply it in practice. And I think you're probably heading in the right direction in a sense of looking for tangible things like the residential property trust, the social cause property trust, that type of thing, which will actually give people access to something that at their own personal level they can then apply this sort of concept.
One of the things I'd like to see with this is... maybe it's going to turn into a financial planning business built around these sort of principles. There's, as you say, there's a lot of the practicalities to come to make that work. But the other thing I'd like to see is really a large, perhaps web-based community built around these principles where, as you say, we're all different, but we'll be able to learn from each other as we try to follow some of these ideas. And I think doing it together could be part of the answer.
All right, I'm going to wrap this up and thank Hayden and Jevon. I found the paper pretty moving. A personal experience I've been through recently was, you know, a 91-year-old aunt who lived in a country town passed away. She wasn't particularly wealthy, but was involved in, I think you would say, on reflection, a lot of causes. I'm probably the monopolist, you know. I'll save up, get a house, get the kids educated, and I'll contribute to something eventually. She was the opposite. And at 91 years old, 400 and something people turned up to her funeral. It was completely amazing, including the support she had over the last year of her life, that you think, man, what sort of balance sheet did she have? I started thinking as I went through that. So I'm struck with the question of, you know, what movements or causes am I actually already involved in and what actions could I be taking? So I want to thank you both for the gift of provoking us a little bit. It's conversation that does that, and to encourage you to keep having those conversations, the Institute has awarded you both a bottle of wine. Please thank them.